Walter Palmer graduated from Eastern Kentucky University in 1986 with a degree in security and loss prevention. He went on to become a leading expert in the retail loss prevention industry. He built a business, PCG Solutions, which was recently purchased by a national risk management company. Walter joins us to talk about the loss prevention profession and what it's like when a big national company comes calling, checkbook in hand. Thanks for joining us, Walter.
Thank you, Tom.
So let's begin with what are some significant ways the loss prevention business has changed or evolved over the years since you graduated from EKU?
Yes. So, you know, it's certainly become more complex. I think one of the things about loss prevention is that people tend to think of the lowest level, entry level positions. They think of security guards, maybe store detectives, as we used to call them in the retail setting, investigators. And actually, loss prevention can become quite complex and go in a lot of different directions as you move up through the ranks. And so people have a misconception about it sometimes because they think of one narrow focus of it.
Yeah. So does this actually go into store planning, the layout of the store, the operations of the store, much higher level than what you described there?
Yeah, if you think about doing it right, then you bake it into kind of all the decisions you make, right? So that it's not the driver. Obviously, you know, you never want the loss prevention or security effort to be the driver of your business unless that's your business. But you want it to be baked in so that you're understanding what the risk and rewards are. I mean, in risk management, you can accept risk, you can mitigate risk, you can try to, you know, transfer risk. So there's lots of ways to deal with it if you get in on the ground floor, so to speak.
Okay, and I know I mentioned store there, and it's much broader than just retail, and we'll go into that in a little bit. But in the business, you now use the phrase total retail loss. What does that mean?
Yeah, so a good friend of mine who's an academic out of the UK has been working on this with some of the industry associations for the last 8 years or so. Actually, the Retail Industry Leaders Association, which is one of the big trade associations, published commissioned research on this recently. And really, it's a way to think about loss in a more holistic fashion so that you're not just thinking about what traditionally people think about malicious loss, shoplifting, employee theft, credit card fraud. And certainly those are important factors. But you know, what about the losses a company incurs from damages or losses they incur through regulatory fines or losses they incur through safety accidents? I mean, what is that total bucket? And is the company doing a good job of looking at it, all those different venues? Because most of those things are cross-functional. So no one person owns them, but you need somebody to kind of be the champion for them.
And what are some of the brands that you've worked with that people might recognize?
Well, if you went out to Hamburg or out Nixville Road, you'd probably see a lot of my clients, you know, in various capacities, everybody from Best Buy to Dick's Sporting Goods to Bed Bath Beyond to Toys R Us to PetSmart. You know, you pretty much can go through the power strip, and I've worked with quite a number of them, let's say.
In your view, what have been some key technological innovations in recent years?
Right. So, you know, when you think about physical security, all of that's just getting more sophisticated, whether that be digital cameras, IP cameras, the locking technologies, safe technologies, all that, which are really important core fundamentals of a loss prevention program. But now, you know, with the IT infrastructure that's out there, cybersecurity, data breaches are a very important topic, as you can imagine, to retailers because they end up on the front page sometimes because they collect so much customer data. So I think the technology in some ways has made our jobs easier. I mean, the analytics, you know, we always hear about big data, the analytics that's available to us now for forecasting potential hotspots, for catching crime. All that is very beneficial to us, but then with every one of those things comes a new risk related to the environment we live in from a technology perspective.
So let's carry that a little bit further. Any of these technologies actually cause problems for you?
Sure. You know, one of the things that you would hear a lot of retailers talk about would be social media, for instance, and the ability to fence goods. But, you know, it used to be in the old day you had to have a shady deal on a street corner or you had to go to a flea market. And now, obviously, with very legitimate sites like eBay and Craigslist and Letgo and all these new ones that pop up, you know, certainly one of the concerns for people is the ability for people to convert stolen goods into cash. That's a very simple thing that's just a byproduct, not an intended product of any of these sites. Or if you think about the social media aspect of people learning how to defeat countermeasures or understanding particular policies or sensitivities to liability, all of these things, this information sharing that benefits us in so many ways can also work against us, quite honestly.
How about mobile points of sale? Are there problems there?
Yeah, so mobile point of sale is really interesting because I think largely because of Apple stores and their popularity, it became a really hot topic in the U.S. about 10 years ago, and it kind of faded away pretty quickly. In Europe, they actually are doing a lot more with mobile POS, and so it's starting to kind of come back to our shore again. In some different iterations. You even have Amazon testing, you know, a cashierless store where there's really no app. So these things are happening. The penetration's not really high yet. But yes, there's lots of logistical issues about if I'm checking out on my phone, how do we audit for that? How do we do analytics on that? How do we make sure that that we don't get in the way of the good customer? It's the same challenge we've always had, but it's just accelerated because now we're removing that human interaction in some cases out of the equation. So yeah, mobile POS is a great example. And the Internet of Things in general is giving more access points around that whole data breach cybersecurity issue.
So we've heard a lot of industries thrilled by the influx of big data and what that offers, but at the same time, needing to add talent to their workforces to be able to interpret it all, make sense of it all. Is that true in your area as well?
Yes. So what you're seeing in specifically in the loss prevention industry is people are starting to recruit different people into their departments. I work with several companies that have pretty robust digital fraud teams that are now looking at it from this loss prevention perspective. And so you're bringing more financial analyst IT people into the equation for those reasons. It is changing the profile of who's going to be successful. You still have to have guards. You still have to have investigators. You still have to have a lot of those traditional things. We were just trying to complement those with some new skill sets as well. So,
as I was scanning the internet, getting ready for this interview, I came across something that really caught my eye. I don't know if this is relevant for you or not, but if it is, tell me. From the National Federation of Retailers, over 9 out of 10 responding to a survey by the organization have been a victim of organized retail crime in the past 12 months. What is that? What is organized retail crime?
Yeah, so it's probably the biggest hot button issue in the last 15 or 20 years. And you can take a couple different views. I actually wrote with a co-author a commissioned paper for ASIS International, which is a leading security organization, on the issue of ORC. Now, this is probably 12 years ago. But organized retail crime has always been around on some level or another. You've always had people that were in retail theft for profit. There's a real sense of an acceleration there. There's a lot of factors that play into it. One is what I mentioned before, easier disposition of goods, conversion to cash, and some of the technologies enabling that. Some of it is people shifting from other types of crime to what they perceive to be lower risk crimes. There's been a big movement. Kentucky actually just defeated this just in the last few days. There's been a big movement towards raising felony thresholds around the country. And that's for legitimate reasons, trying to take some of the pressure off the criminal justice system. There are certainly people on the private side that think that that leads towards increased offending because there's no sanction for it. You know, Prop 47 in California is probably the one that's the rallying cry most often in my industry, which is, okay, anything under 950 basically is almost excused absence, if you will. And so, I think there's a lot of different perceptions about why it's happening, but there's certainly a significant element of people out there who actually are doing this for a living, for financial gain. They're very rational actors. We still have a tremendous amount of people that offend that are, opportunistic or, we used to call them amateurs. They're people that just make a bad mistake. And we have to deal with each of those groups a little bit differently.
And you said Kentucky just defeated. Was there proposed legislation before the General Assembly?
Yeah, there was proposed legislation to raise the felony threshold. And again, it wasn't necessarily aimed specifically around retail larceny, but that just kind of falls into that bucket. A lot of retailers are now trying to and government relations people, what we're talking about is maybe not trying to fight so much the felony thresholds, because a lot of states, the ship has already sailed on that. But if we're going to do that, then let us also have some statutory provisions for aggregation of offenses, so that that way, if we do have repeat offenders who are really in it to abuse the system, they can't just steal at, you know, just below the felony threshold repeatedly and it never be aggregated. So we're trying to figure out what's the right balance there, because the motivation behind these felony changes are really about the criminal justice resources more so than trying to harm any private actors here.
And going back to that survey by the National Federation of Retailers, more than a quarter of responding retailers said that these gangs are exhibiting much more aggression compared to not so long ago. Are you seeing that? Can you confirm it?
Yeah. In fact, it's been a significant amount of conversation in the last several years. You can't go to an industry meeting over the last 3 years and not end up talking about violence against staff. All of my clients are concerned about it. Sometimes it's actually actual violence. Sometimes it's the threat of violence or intimidation, which still feels really bad. Sometimes it's coming in and stealing a whole table of merchandise and spraying mace to kind of cover your tracks. So, again, you know, there's a lot of different views around this, is why this is happening. There's probably some macro level things happening in society around the way people act that we probably aren't going to be able to control. And so we're trying to figure out how to protect our people, you know, our associates and employees and our customers. You know, this is not something that anybody wants in the public domain. So
what would you say would be the biggest challenge that loss prevention professionals will encounter in the coming year or so?
I think right now, you know, we're being very reactive, and we're being reactive not because we intend to, but because there is so much change going on in the retail marketplace right now, from a mobile POS, e-commerce, ship from store, buy online, pick up in store, all these different variables that are introducing potentials for abuse or just mistakes, you know, unintentional mistakes. And so I think those things are being driven by the retail competitive marketplace. And so I think that those things are constantly challenging loss prevention people to take on those additional things in addition to the core baseline stuff. And a lot of our clients, a lot of our industry, also very focused on safety issues and workers' comp and keeping people safe, being compliant with OSHA. So all those core responsibilities are not going to go away. So now we just have to, on top of that, build the skill set to deal with these other things as well. When we're in an environment where resources are tough because it's a very competitive, low-margin business in certain sectors.
Okay, we've talked about loss prevention in retail. What other areas, what other industries, areas of business call for your kinds of services?
Yeah, well, most of them in some form or another. And again, the priority is different depending on the client. You know, I actually have done a little bit of work outside of the retail, or a fair amount outside of retail. We worked with a healthcare system actually out of the Northwest. And again, their issues are largely around both patient and employee safety. They have some significant issues there. Cybersecurity in the healthcare industry is huge because of the amount, not only because of HIPAA and the regulations there, but because of the huge exposure to the privacy of the information. We actually worked a little bit in with spirits and distilleries. Their issues are a little bit different, more of a manufacturing environment. You get into distribution and supply chain, you've got a lot of powered industrial equipment. You have a lot of safety issues in a very high volume market. So it varies by industry, but almost everybody has some exposure. The thing that for me that attracted me to retail is you get exposed to all of it, right? You've got the public, you've got employees, you've got cash, you've got food and beverage, you've got merchandise, you know, you've got the whole shebang, right? Whereas if you're in a corporate security environment, you're not dealing with some of those issues, but you've got your own set of issues that you're dealing with.
Let's turn to the acquisition of your company, of PCG Solutions. First, a little history, if you would. Did you go directly into the loss prevention business after you graduated from EKU?
I did, actually. You know, like a lot of people, because people don't understand this industry very well, a lot of us ended up here by accident. I actually was going to apply for a job at McAlpin's over in Turfville Mall to sell men's socks and underwear. And they happened to have an opening, and the personnel woman asked me if I'd ever thought about doing retail security. And that sounded a whole lot sexier than selling socks and underwear. And that's how I stumbled into it. And it just so happens that EKU has a nationally known program that really is very very unique in the sense that they have programs geared towards the private sector here, in addition to police science and some of the other stuff. And so I did go into retail. I actually minored in fire and safety and considered that. I really felt like it would be a lot more interesting to be in the retail LP world because of the broadness of exposures that you get involved in. So yeah, went into it right out of, had about 2 years of experience when I got out of college. I was working full time while I was going to school, and then I've been in it ever since. So 84 is when I started.
You know, you mentioned the program at EKU. It's interesting. At the time of this interview that you and I are talking, among the programs on the chopping block, yep, potential programs to be cut due to these budget cuts at EKU, is risk management and insurance. But isn't demand for talent in this area only increasing?
Yeah, there is a talent pipeline issue in the risk management and insurance world. I don't want to speak for the university because I'm not close enough to know. But my understanding is there's still going to be the BBA program in risk and management and insurance. You know, one of the issues becomes is does the risk management function live in something like the business school? Does it live over more in the asset protection group? And so there's been some shifting back and forth with various programs. I think they're going to continue to offer some risk and insurance, but I think it'll be, I think from an accreditation perspective, it has to be in the business college. So I think they're going to shave some of it, but I don't have enough inside knowledge to be the expert on that.
Right. And I want to emphasize, I was not criticizing EKU there. They have a huge problem on their hands with $25 million yes. in cuts. So yeah. Thinking back to those days, though, when you first hung your shingle, did you then think or hope to build a business that might someday be attractive to a buyout?
Yeah, so I spent about 15 years as a practitioner, right? So I worked for major companies doing that as a profession. And most recently, before I started my own company in 2000, I was up in the Northeast working as the head of asset protection for a major retailer. And so when in 2000, I moved back to Lexington and started the business. And it was really just a recognition at that point of the things that I liked doing around specifically developing training programs that hopefully mitigate risk at the frontline level and also doing strategic level consulting. So, no, it was really at that point, there was no idea about what the future would be. It was just so much that, okay, I was kind of tired of doing the corporate thing. Just because you're successful in the corporate environment doesn't mean that you like it. And every company has their own bureaucracy and all that. And I had the opportunity to do something that I thought was more my passion. And so that was the whole motivation. There was no thought about what's the end game, you know, 15 years down the road, I guess.
So what is the acquiring company? Who bought you?
So actually, it's interesting. There's a little bit of history. So I've always thought that loss prevention is a subset from a theoretical perspective of risk management. I mentioned it earlier. When you talk about risk, there's only four or five, six ways you can handle it. You can avoid it. Just say, I'm not going to accept that risk. I'm going to avoid doing that business. You can accept the risk. You can try to mitigate it. You can transfer through insurance, for instance. But what we do in loss prevention is really part of risk. And so the people that really get that are the people that come out of the insurance piece. And actually, the acquiring company is a company called Epic Insurance Brokers. And we have developed a new division within their organization called Integrated Risk Solutions. And if you think about it, just because you have your car insured doesn't necessarily mean that you don't buckle your seatbelt or drive recklessly. Or just because you have your house insured doesn't mean you don't lock the doors or maybe put in a an alarm system. You know, what we're trying to do is, okay, yes, you need to finance certain types of risk, but also what are the things we can do to make those incidents less likely to happen? And so the insurance people have the financing piece, and we have the risk assurance and the asset protection piece. So it's a really a nice marriage. I've had a couple opportunities over the years to sell my business, and it never felt like the right fit. And this one is where I can continue to bring what I've been bringing to the table for the last 18 years and work with their existing clients to be a little bit more holistic and integrated the way they approach risk.
And so was it a very long courtship? And what is that like when you finally hand over the keys?
Number one, it's all good. I'm very excited about it. It was with people that I've done business with for a long time. So we were able to actually prove out some of these concepts you know, as when they were working in a private sector and I was working with them. So cybersecurity, we've talked about a couple of times. So retailers have a big risk there, right? To go out into the market and insure that risk is very expensive, especially if you can't tell a story about what you're doing to manage that risk. So with this one group, we adopted a cybersecurity maturity model and started tracking our progress as far as how mature they were becoming around it. And what you find is if you do that, the underwriters actually understand that and then will give you better rates and better coverage. And so I actually was working with some of these same people before, and we said, you know what, this works here. We can make this work for other clients as well. So it was probably about a year that we, from the time we started talking about it to when we actually did the deal. And we've just really consummated here in the last couple of months. But I will tell you, when I actually was signing the papers, I had to kind of pause for a second because everybody said, hey, you've had your own business for all this time. You can do whatever you want. But I think the opportunity is going to work pretty well. I'm pretty excited about it because it gives me some resources. And actually, I'm going to do some work now in some segments that I might not have chased on my own because of the resources that are available.
Has this required much adjustment in your day-to-day operation?
Luckily, most of our group's based down in Houston, and Lexington is the first office for Epic in this area. So right now, I still get to kind of do my thing to the extent that you're not driven by your clients' needs and conferences and all of that. So I still travel extensively. I think as our business in the Kentucky area grows, I think it'll become a little bit more formal. But right now, it's been pretty good.
So what excites you most about doing this, about what you do for a living?
So, you know, at the end of the day, most of what we deal with are things that you wish as a business you didn't have to deal with. I mean, most of the things that we're trying to manage against are things that you never want to have happen. Catastrophic accidents, robberies, violence, theft. These are not things that are accretive to any business. And so I think in my mind, if we're able to manage those risks for a company, it feels kind of good. You know, if you can take a distribution environment and reduce their worker comp injuries by 25-30%, like we just did with a client, that feels pretty good because it means people aren't getting hurt. And it means the company's doing better financially and we're adding value. And so I think even though people would look at it, oh, why would you want to deal with all those negative issues? If you can be good at that and be effective at that, it's pretty rewarding, actually.
So do you keep PCG Solutions, the brand, or is it gone now?
PCG will be transitioning away. So it'll be branding towards the new thing. I think the PCG name, because it's been out there for 18 years, will still be in some people's minds what it is. But from a tactical perspective, it'll start transitioning away, yeah.
Walter Palmer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
This podcast is produced in the studios of Dynamics Productions, an audio recording and sound design facility in Lexington. On the web at dxaudio.com. Dynamics Productions. We listen.